human rights violations in Jammu and Kashmir.
Whoever they are at the helm of affairs, that they should come forward and they should intervene. They should try to mitigate the human rights violations.
Kashmir, a Muslim-majority Himalayan region, is divided between India and Pakistan, and both claim it in full. The Kashmir dispute also led to several wars between the two nuclear-armed Asian rivals since they were separated back in 1947.
Pakistanis keep saying that they will continue to lend moral, diplomatic and political support to the just cause of Kashmir. They have also called on neighboring India to honor its commitments to the Kashmiri people regarding the right to self-determination. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
For the third time in 4 months, former United States President Donald Trump has been indicted. But this time, it's over his role in the controversial events in Washington on January 6, 2020. Trump pled not guilty to 4 counts of engaging in a criminal conspiracy to subvert the 2020 vote results and obstruction.
When you look at what's happening, this is a persecution of a political opponent. This was never supposed to happen in America. This is the persecution of the person that's leading by very, very substantial numbers in the Republican primary and leading Biden by a lot. So if you can't beat him, you persecute him or you prosecute him.
Most presidential vote polls show the race is too close to call. The ruling Democratic Party has put the United States in a historically unprecedented and potentially explosive situation. Polls show a nation evenly split on if Trump did anything illegal on January 6th, and if it is time to move on from the events that day. Trump's approval rating is up 8 points among Republicans and Republican-leaning independents since the first indictment was handed down. Many Republicans have said that the long-delayed indictments for Trump, a sweetheart plea agreement for Biden's son, and the FBI's admitted collusion with social media companies to censor reporting which could have negatively impacted Biden in 2020 is proof of political bias in the nation's judicial system. Trump's defense is likely to include that he acted on the advice of well-regarded legal counsel, which may make it difficult to show criminal intent, and that he honestly believed the vote was not legal. A new poll shows that 70% of Republicans also believe that Biden's 2020 win was illegitimate.
Multiple court cases against Trump, an increasingly likely impeachment trial in Congress for Joe Biden, ongoing corruption allegations against Joe's son Hunter Biden. The 2024 presidential campaign is shaping up to be even more divisive and full of mudslinging than in 2020. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Leaving Lebanon's economy with an almost total economic meltdown, Riyad Salemeh has stepped down as the governor of the central bank. The central bank's newly appointed acting governor, Wasim Mansouri, on Monday called on the government to implement a capital control law, a financial restructuring law, and a 2023 state budget within 6 months.
We were able to convince the government that the subsidies policy needs to stop, and as a result, management improved, and the economy relatively began to recover. However, the government's need for the U.S. dollar continues, since the only way to end the government's reliance on the central bank was to improve public finances. The problem is not monetary, and the solution is not with the central bank. The main issue is in the financial policies of the state, and there needs to be a clear decision to improve general management.
He stressed that the bank would impose restrictions on when to lend money to the government. Salemeh was for years credited for economic recovery following Lebanon's civil war, yet now he is being investigated by at least 7 countries, including Lebanon, for embezzlement and illicit enrichment. He denies the accusations. A former advisor to 3 central bank governors in Lebanon tells Press TV that Salemeh was merely following the U.S. policies.
He was implementing the U.S. policies, and U.S. policies since the end of World War II stipulated that the countries of the Third World are prohibited from development. They only allowed Korea and Taiwan to prosper since they want to confront China and Russia, but they also supported Israel in this region and even prevented Egypt from becoming an industrial nation.
The problem, he believes, is a problem of mismanagement as well as in the structure of the policies, which bound the Lebanese lira to the U.S. dollar.
He pegged the price of the Lebanese lira to the U.S. dollar, saying that this would stabilize the lira, but this was a catastrophic mistake, which I had warned against. The U.S. dollar itself is not stable, so pegging the lira to the U.S. dollar won't make it stable. We needed to peg our currency to a basket of currencies based on imports to Lebanon. This impacted Lebanon's ability to compete in the global markets.
The current financial crisis began in 2019 when the value of the Lebanese lira plummeted and inflation soared in the Arab country.
After 30 years in his post, Lebanon's former central bank governor is seen by many experts as being the main orchestrator of the financial and monetary policies, which led to an abrupt collapse. However, there are also speculations that he couldn't have done it without collaboration from the country's political elite. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Arab woman who took on two far-right activists in a bid to save a Quran from desecration in Denmark has been identified. Iraqi-Danish citizen Quds al-Samarai risked her own life while en route to visit a friend on Monday, the 24th of July. The footage of the incident, which occurred outside Iraq's embassy, went viral on social media. The video clearly shows Quds grabbing the Quran before being wrestled to the ground by the two men. In one instance, one of the desecrators can be seen with his hands reaching for her neck. Police later arrested Quds on accusations she was stealing the Quran from the activists. Speaking to Press TV, Quds explained how the incident left her with minor injuries, but no regrets.
Here the police dragged me, and the man was shouting that I stole his property. I think he was scared because he knew hitting me was wrong, so he had to justify it by saying I stole. As soon as the police heard the word stealing, they immediately put me in handcuffs and gave him back the Quran. The police asked me what happened. I said I saw our Quran being burned, and I just wanted to put it out. And then I saw another Quran with shoes on it, and I wanted to take the shoe off. But I didn't realize that the shoe was nailed on the Quran. I told the police they hit me and strangled me, but they replied with, it's their freedom of speech. So I replied, okay, so it's also my freedom of speech to protect the Quran. I thought the police came to help me, but they turned out to twist the story by saying I was trying to steal.
Quds now faces a day in court, while her injuries have left her struggling to walk. Meanwhile, Muslims across the world remain in a state of anger as calls for serious action and retaliation to Europe's defense of far-right hate speech continues.
Despite Copenhagen officially condemning the incident which occurred just where we stand outside Iraq's embassy a few days ago, that doesn't mean that they've outlawed the practice. And according to reports, several other similar incidents have already occurred since, with far-right activists again targeting the diplomatic buildings of Muslim-majority nations here in the Danish capital. However, this has come at a price. Denmark's defense of the so-called free speech of far-right activists to attack Islam's holy sanctities has led to both Denmark and Sweden's reputation to plummet across the Muslim world. Questions should surely be asked now whether it is indeed within the diplomatic interests of European countries to defend such a fringe extremist practice when, of course, there is so much at stake with economic backlashes from the Muslim world. Robert Carter, Copenhagen.
For the first time, America is set to put on trial a former president in one of the most consequential criminal cases in the country's legal history. Ex-President Donald Trump has faced criminal charges for a third time in 4 months.
Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with conspiring to defraud the United States, conspiring to disenfranchise voters, and conspiring and attempting to obstruct an official proceeding.
The indictment pertains to Trump's efforts to overturn his 2020 election defeat to incumbent President Joe Biden. It focuses on his actions in the two-month period between his loss to Biden and the infamous riot in Washington, D.C. During this period, Trump vehemently denied the election results, repeatedly asserting that the votes had been stolen.
All of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing, and stolen by the fake news media. That's what they've done and what they're doing. We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved.
According to the indictment, Trump knowingly propagated false fraud claims and exerted pressure on state and federal officials, including Vice President Mike Pence, to manipulate the election results. When failed, Trump directed his supporters to stop certifying Biden's win. That turned into a violent attack on the U.S. Capitol, leading to five deaths, a move that is described as an attack on America's democracy.
The attack on our nation's capital on January 6, 2021, was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy.
Trump vehemently dismisses the case as ridiculous and maintains his innocence, refuting any allegations of wrongdoing. He even goes further to accuse the prosecutors of being politically motivated, claiming they are acting on behalf of Biden to meddle in the forthcoming presidential elections, in which Trump and Biden could face off again. The two are currently tied in polls. The Trump campaign has also asserted that the Tuesday indictment amounts to election interference. Nonetheless, this is not the only obstacle standing in the way of Trump's return to presidency. The Republican politician has already been charged in two other cases, mishandling classified files and falsifying business records to cover up a hush money payment to an adult film actress, the charges that have significantly hit the former president's reputation among many Americans.
I hope he goes to prison for a long time. I think he deserves to go to prison for a long, for all the crimes he committed.
Donald Trump is now due to appear in a Washington, D.C. court on Thursday. He faces 78 criminal counts overall. These charges mean the ex-president will have three criminal trials to attend in the next 12 to 18 months, complicating his second run for the White House.
A private workshop in Kabul, where over 50 women are working and being trained, has provided a place for women to learn making different handicrafts. These women are producing stunning artifacts, despite the problems they stumble upon.
We produce traditional clothing such as leather purses and shoes, hats, carpets and traditional dresses. We used to earn a living previously, but now our sales have decreased and most families face economic problems as a result.
Fereshta Hashemi, the woman who launched this place, says more and more women are showing interest in private workshops because restrictions imposed by the Taliban has deprived them from social activities.
Previously, the schools and universities were open to women, but now, as a result of the restrictions on women, girls cannot go to school and female teachers have lost their job, which is why they show interest in learning a profession so they could work in the future and earn a living.
Lida, one of the trainees in this workshop, was a teacher when the Taliban banned women from education and women teachers lost their jobs. She says maybe in the future this profession helps her earn a living.
Previously, I was a teacher and I lost my job. I wanted to learn a profession, so I came here. I am learning leather crafting now and hope to run my workshop someday to earn a living.
When the Taliban took control of the country in 2021, they banned women from education and gradually from most of the jobs in the country. Even most female-dominated professions like women's hairdressing salons were closed a week ago.
Women in Afghanistan are taking refuge in small businesses not only to provide for their families, but also to get relieved from the mental pressure of being restricted from education and the other jobs they used to do. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
From Vermont to Texas, desperately needed coronavirus-era social programs are ending in the United States. On August 1st, many areas ended their moratoriums on debt to landlords, meaning nearly a million children are now at risk of eviction in the city of Los Angeles alone. Families have the highest risk of losing their home, while half of those saying they expect to be evicted are Black or Latino. Evictions in the United States have recently soared to reach double what they were before the pandemic.
Lost our jobs because of the pandemic. Lost everything we had because of the pandemic. We found a place to live with a buddy in Cheyenne, Wyoming, but he died, and that was in March. And so we decided to come out here because we thought there would be more opportunities. We're just hoping to get jobs and get into a place to live and get a car and function. And that, so far, we've been struck out. As you can see, we're packing our bags. We're going back to Colorado.
America's decentralized model of federalism makes a nationwide approach to the evictions wave impossible. Public camping is illegal in many places, like Texas, which makes it harder for charity workers to find and help the homeless.
I had a stroke, and I was bleeding on the brain, and, you know, I had to go to rehab a lot to learn how to walk and talk again and all that. I've only been homeless like a year and a half. I went to Cornerstone Shelter, Sarah Circle Shelter, and now I'm in a tent. But I got a caseworker, I went to church, and the Cornerstone supervisor told me I popped up on her computer and I got, you know, she's got housing for me.
Other vital social services are also being withdrawn. Millions of Americans, including children and new mothers, just lost their medical coverage for the first time in 3 years after Washington refused to extend the pandemic-era program. College tuition debt represents an incredible 7% of U.S. GDP. In October, 41 million Americans will have to start repaying an average of $400 per month, and many say this alone could push the country into a recession. A lack of affordable housing is something that any committed government can easily fix by writing laws which favor tenants instead of rich landlords, by putting more tax revenue into building more public housing, and by creating more shelters for those with emergency needs. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
An overwhelming majority of Britons say the cost of living crisis is the biggest issue facing the country at the moment, placing further question marks over Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's chances at the next general election, given his difficulties gaining control over the issue. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Daily Mirror has covered this story and tells us more. Research revealed on Thursday, 3rd of August, that 6 million workers are grappling with the cost of living crisis while toiling in insecure jobs. Analysts said grafters on zero-hours contracts, the low-paid self-employed, employees getting less than 16 hours a week, and people in casual, seasonal, or fixed-term and agency roles were worse placed as they battled through the hardship. A survey study for the Living Wage Foundation found that 19% of British workers are in insecure jobs, while 10% are in insecure jobs that also pay below the real living wage. The figures represent 6.1 million and 3.4 million people respectively. Survation is a polling and market research agency based in London. Some 59% of all shift workers have received less than a week's notice of working hours, with 13% being given less than 24 hours' notice. Critics say it makes life difficult for people to arrange other employment and plan paying bills, and with some even driven to food banks. A quarter of shift workers have had stints cancelled unexpectedly by their boss, with 90% not given their full rate of pay and 22% plunging deeper into debt or turning to credit cards. The foundation said workers who are most affected by insecurity are those least well-placed to manage its financial burdens. It highlighted cleaners, delivery drivers and some National Health Service staff as being up to five times more likely to be in insecure jobs than those earning at or above the real living wage. The minimum hourly legal rate for staff aged over 23 years old is £10.42 an hour, while the voluntary real living wage is £10.90 an hour for workers of all ages, rising to £11.95 an hour in London. The Living Wage Foundation urged British firms to sign up to its latest scheme, Living Hours. Under the project, employers pledge to provide at least 4 weeks' notice for every shift, with guaranteed payment if shifts are cancelled within that notice period. Companies also offer a guaranteed minimum of 16 working hours a week, unless the worker requests fewer and a contract reflecting hours worked. The foundation's director, Catherine Chapman, said soaring prices have rightly shone a spotlight on pay this past year, but this research makes clear that reliable working hours are as vital as workers' financial resilience as a real living wage. It is shocking that 3.4 million workers are facing the cost of living crisis in low-paying jobs with unstable working hours, making planning a life and a budget impossible. Catherine Chapman added, while the rate of inflation has begun to fall, households across the country don't need economists to tell them that prices remain exorbitantly high. That is why we're calling on employers to join those who have already stepped up during this crisis and commit to provide workers with living hours, secure guaranteed hours and notice of shift patterns alongside a real living wage. Joseph Rowntree's Foundation's senior policy advisor, Louise Woodruff, said, reliable hours and a real living wage are the foundations of good employment, making it truly shocking that this report reveals millions of people are navigating the cost of living crisis in low-paid, insecure jobs. It's clear we cannot beat in-work poverty without profound changes in Britain's labour market. The Living Wage Foundation's Living Hours scheme provides employers with a framework to lead us towards a future of stable employment and decent pay, of dignity for Servation polled 2,023 people online in April. The website Reddit has also covered the same story and tells us more. Against the backdrop of coronavirus pandemic and soaring inflation, British businesses have defied the odds and signed up to join the living wage movement in record numbers over the past 2 years. There are now 13,000 living wage employers across the United Kingdom signed up to pay the independently calculated real living wage to all directly employed and subcontracted staff. Insecure work, especially when coupled with low pay, remains a vicious combination trapping millions of people in work poverty. New research from the Living Wage Foundation released on Thursday, 3rd of August, reveals that a staggering 6 million British jobs are insecure, including over 1 million people on zero-hour contracts. As well as making it hard to budget and plan, insecure employment costs workers. This insecurity premium can add up to £600 per year because of last-minute shift cancellations or being called into work at short notice. For example, 27% of insecure workers had to spend more on travel, 17% have had to pay higher childcare costs, and around 24% have had shifts cancelled unexpectedly, with 25% then not paid at all. With pay packets already eroded by high inflation, these additional costs place yet another pressure on those at the sharpest end of the cost of living crisis. Economists say job security is a critical next piece of the picture if British officials are to eradicate in-work poverty in the United Kingdom. The website of iNews has also covered the same story and tells us more. Polling showed the majority of British people say they are struggling or just about managing in the face of the worst cost of living crisis in a generation. An exclusive survey by BMG Consulting on behalf of iNews reveals that nearly 6 in 10 voters, or 58%, say they are just staying afloat due to the historic squeeze on household budgets. The figures come just days before the Bank of England will decide on whether to raise interest rates for the 14th consecutive time, with speculation mounting that the bank could increase interest rates by 0.25 percentage point to 5.25%. Pressure is on the bank to raise interest rates for both the US Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank, the ECB, increased base rates by 0.25 percentage point recently. It comes amid growing fears that another rate rise risks tipping the economy into an unnecessary recession, with households already battling to keep their finances in check. Polling for iNews shows that Britons are far more likely to say they're struggling or just about managing in the current climate. Perhaps of greater concern for the government, more than half, or 52%, of the more than 1,500 people surveyed say they were worried about paying for everyday essentials such as food, petrol and bills each month. Of that, nearly 1 in 5, or 18%, said they were very worried. An overwhelming majority of respondents, 80%, said the cost of living crisis was the biggest issue facing the country at the moment, placing a further question mark over Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's chances at the next election, given his difficulties gaining control over the issue. Inflation has remained stubbornly high throughout 2023, with the latest figures showing prices rising by 7.9%. The slowing in inflation has left the Prime Minister facing an uphill battle to bring it down to half the 10.1% he committed to in January. But the headline inflation rate only shows part of the picture, with the cost of food in the United Kingdom higher than it has been for more than 40 years.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Pakistan ex-Prime Minister Imran Khan has been arrested after a court sentenced him to 3 years in jail for illegally selling state gifts. The conviction, which was handed down in absentia, bans Khan from political office for the next 5 years. But is that something that Prime Minister Khan, or the former Prime Minister Khan, would do, sell state gifts? Or is Khan a victim of infighting? Or maybe he was a victim of outside interference, like from the U.S., which he has said in the past, in which the former PM has accused the U.S. of trying to oust him. But why would the U.S. want to have him removed from power? Just a few of the questions we'll be asking our guests in this edition of The Spotlight. Let me introduce them. Abdullah Khan, Managing Director of the Pakistan Institute for Conflict and Security Studies, joins us from Islamabad. Also joining us is Shayan Ali, social activist, who joins us from London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Abdullah Khan, let me first start with you. So you're well aware of the sentence. You have the Pakistani former prime minister handed a three-year prison sentence. Do you think that was justified based on the allegations leveled against him?
Thank you for inviting me to your show. Actually, this the case against Imran Khan is generally perceived as political wrangling between the powerful circles and Imran Khan. And what the courts has to decide whether it is on merit or not, because yesterday Islamabad High Court had said that this trial court, which has had issued the order today, has to first decide whether this case is maintainable or not. But we were surprised that in the afternoon at around 12 p.m. that we heard about this decision. So still there are a lot of questions about this, the process of the legal. There are questions on the impartiality of the judge, and there are other things as well. The same case is pending in the Supreme Court as well and in the High Court as well. So a lot of the lawyer, the legal experts, they say that this the decision of the session court will not stay in any higher court. So let's see what happens next.
Well, let me ask you something. From what we understand, 150 different charges have been leveled against Imran Khan. That sounds like a record.
Hey, as I told you, this is Imran Khan is fighting a lawfare against him, is being unleashed by the powerful circles in Pakistan by the PDM government. Because when Imran Khan was prime minister at that time, the PDM leaders were at the receiving ends, and they were facing such kind of charges. Most of the prime ministers, they were convicted. Yusuf Raza Gilani was convicted. Nawaz Sharif was convicted. Imran Khan was convicted. Similarly, we have seen the Parvez Musharraf was convicted. And Zulfikar Ali Bhutto was not only convicted, but he was also hanged.
Yeah, we're going to get into that hopefully by the end of this program. It's one of the things I'd like to discuss as to why none of the prime ministers, at least in the recent memory, has actually been able to finish their term. But let me come to you, Shayan Ali. Taking a look at what warnings Khan has issued, he said that he would be arrested to prevent him from participating in the elections. Do you think this then is not a coincidence based on what has happened in terms of the charges leveled against him and now, of course, the prison sentence that has been handed down to him?
Well, hello, and thank you for having me on the show. This case, the Tosha Khan case, this is a politically motivated case. Imran Khan said multiple times, and even we saw on the 9th of May, when Imran Khan was first arrested, and that arrest was deemed illegal by the Supreme Court of Pakistan. This is another attempt to contain Imran Khan and his popularity, which isn't going to work because I'm just coming from a protest in London. It was a massive protest. Imran Khan's popularity is soaring. This is a politically motivated case, the Toshikhana case. I'll also tell you, the Interior Minister of Pakistan, Rana Sanaullah, he was on a talk show a few days ago, and he was asked, after the three cases Imran Khan is facing, which case is the most serious case? And he said that the conviction that the case is going to be in was going to be either the Al-Qadir case or the Toshikhana case. The match was fixed well before the hearing was done. And you can also see Judge Dilawar, who is the judge who issued this sentence, the three-year prison sentence of Imran Khan Niazi, he is flying to London. Why is he flying to London? He booked this ticket well before earlier in the week, how did he know that the trial is going to be finished by Saturday unless the game was already fixed before? And of course, it's evident that the government, this regime, it's desperately trying to contain Imran Khan's popularity because
Think they want to do that.
Because if Imran Khan is allowed to contest elections in Pakistan, it is not a surprise that he's going to win by a landslide. Let me compare the convictions that Nawaz Sharif faced compared with Imran Khan. Nawaz Sharif faced convictions after the Panama paper leaks in 2017, which revealed, you know, offshore accounts, especially in Panama. The thing with Imran Khan is no one's believing these corruption charges. When Nawaz Sharif was convicted, I'll tell you from my own experience, I saw people giving sweets, mitais, that's what we call them in Pakistan. That's what they were handing out. Imran Khan, both times he's been released, protesters are taking to the streets. They're peacefully protesting both in Pakistan and London.
Let's see what our guests think. Abdullah Khan, you heard our guest there from London. Do you agree with him? I mean, does the government want to contain Imran Khan and his popularity? And, of course, the corruption charges that our guest says is bogus. Go ahead.
Let me correct one thing, that Mr. Nawaz Sharif was not convicted in Panama, because although the case was about the Panama, but he was convicted for a very, you know, flimsy ground, that he could not receive salary from his son. So that was something that he could not declare in his assets. And the similar kind of this case about Imran Khan is also exactly the same, that Imran Khan could not declare the Toshikhana items which he sold, that the money he could not declare in his tax returns. So the prime ministers were declared almost with similar cases, and these cases has no strong legal grounds, and both will eventually end up in quashing by the higher courts. But as far as Mr. Shayan said, that I agree with him, that Imran Khan's popularity is indeed soaring in Pakistan. And we have seen that...
Why is that? Why does Imran Khan have so much popularity, you think?
Because of, Imran Khan's popularity was going down in 2021. But suddenly last year, when his government was ended in a controversial no-confidence movement, and then the new government, the PDM government, could not actually control the inflation, and it could not actually satisfy the people. And people suddenly started to recall the Imran Khan's government. So that was
let's find out what our guest there in London thinks about that. Shan Ali, let's try to move beyond court proceedings, beyond allegations, beyond charges, and get to the heart of the matter, because I'd like to find out exactly what's going on, as I'm sure a lot of other people around the world. What is going on with the case of Imran Khan? Let's go back to the time when he was removed from power. We know that this happened in a no-confidence vote, but we know at the heart of that was the fact that Imran Khan said there was outside interference, and he squarely blamed the U.S. for it, which I'm sure you're well aware. Do you agree with him?
Yes.
Do you think that that happened?
Well, I do agree that since this government came into power in April 2022, Pakistan has been going nowhere apart from a downward spiral. Imran Khan had no reason to lie that a U.S. conspiracy is what got him removed from office. He claimed that Donald Liu, that's the person he named, is the one who sent a cipher to the then Chief of Army Staff, General Bajwa, saying that Imran Khan must be removed or else Pakistan will face consequences. What these consequences are, we can leave that for assumption. But the U.S. has no business making these sorts of claims, making these sorts of threats to a sovereign country like Pakistan. Pakistanis should be able to decide who should govern.
The U.S. says
it
hasn't done that. The official line from the U.S. is we did not participate in that. Go ahead.
Yes, but the U.S. also said that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and they lied about that. So what's saying that they're not lying right now? Imran Khan has no reason to lie. Imran Khan's popularity is soaring. It would have soared whether the whether the United States said this or not. Imran Khan's popularity was relatively high compared to the kind of current PDM parties, even when he was in government. Because, you know, governments aren't usually popular, but his government was still maintaining power, and he was still predicted to win the next upcoming election. Right now, if after he's been removed from power, his power is just... popularity just skyrocketed. It skyrocketed
okay.
well.
Let's break that angle to Mr. Abdullah Khan. Given the fact that Imran Khan, and as you admitted just minutes ago, Abdullah Khan, is so popular, isn't that a bit odd and a bit fishy how this coincided, this accusation against him that has now been handed down to a jail term for him of 3 years or up to 5 years from what we understand? Because if elections were held today, maybe I should ask you this. Would Imran Khan prevail?
First, let me admit one thing, that Imran Khan's soaring popularity or unprecedented popularity is basically the majority of the anti-American sentiment in Pakistan, because it is a fact that anti-America sentiment in Pakistan are very high, and this was accepted by our National Security Committee that the Americans...
Why is that the case when it comes to anti-American sentiment being so high in your country?
What?
Why is there such a high anti-American sentiment in your country?
Because of many reasons. You know, Pakistan and America, they remain allies to each other, but we have seen double standard by the Americans a lot of time. Even during war and terror, we have seen the double standard by the Americans. They still have a lot of money owed to Pakistan. They confiscated more than $900 million they owe to Pakistan in Coalition Support Fund. They froze that. They stopped F-16 spare parts and a lot of other things. And beside that, they always sided with the elements of anti-Pakistan. You know, Pakistan sided with America twice in war and terror, as well as in war against the Soviet Union. But we have seen that it was India which ended up being the strategic partner of America, not the Pakistan. So for Pakistan, the Americans always applied double standards, and that is the reason that the anti-Americanism in Pakistan is always high, because people are actually fed up of the double standards of the Americans.
Shayan Ali, we have, on the one hand, the U.S. factor. On the other hand, if you can explain to us the ISI factor, tell us how these two coincide and what it has to do with Imran Khan and for him to not be in a position of prime minister any longer.
I'd just like to correct one thing. Although I do agree with a lot of points that Mr. Abdullah said, I just disagree with one point that Pakistan is anti-American. I don't believe Pakistan is anti-American. Me, myself, as a British Pakistani, I'm not anti-American. I think Pakistanis are just pro-Pakistan. They just want to see what's best for Pakistan, not the United States, because at the end of the day, they care about what's better for themselves. And that's what Imran Khan believed. Imran Khan wanted what's best for his people of Pakistan. So I don't really think that Pakistan has an anti-America policy, anti-American point of view, whether it's with the public or whether it's the politicians or whether it's the authorities of Pakistan. I think they just have a pro-Pakistan stance. And now when it comes to the ISI and Imran Khan, This is where it gets complicated, because now a lot of facts aren't coming to light and we can only go speculation. Well, one thing is for sure, that a key role in this entire conspiracy against Imran Khan with this unfair trial, it's no rumor that this is an unfair trial, how it was conducted and how the courts have been failing the people of Pakistan and Imran Khan by opening at 12 a.m. to rule against him, but being closed even on weekdays when it's in the favor of Imran Khan. A key element in all of this is the London plan, what Imran Khan dubbed himself, the London plan. A key role in Pakistani politics is being played because of this plan. This plan is being executed, and this plan was allegedly drafted in London, as the name suggests, by people such as Nawaz Sharif. Now, the main question is, why is London such a key role, key place for all these events to take place? Why is London the hub for all these corrupt criminals, such as Nawaz Sharif? Nawaz Sharif was convicted on corruption charges for over a decade. He was living in London on expired bail for years. Why was he allowed by the British government to stay in London for this long, to plan against Pakistani democracy, against Imran Khan, and to help operate a regime that is fascist and violating the rights of thousands of Pakistanis? That's the question that should be raised. Why has the British government allowed...
Let me raise that with our guest in Islamabad. Let's find out if he has an answer. If you agree with his question, do you have an answer for him?
You're asking me?
Yes, yes.
As far as the London plan is concerned, there are accusations without substantial evidence. People accuse, and Imran Khan also made a lot of claims. And at the same time, Imran Khan himself made a lot of U-turns, even regarding the cipher and the American conspiracy, which Imran Khan publicly said. And then in one of his interview to one of the Western media outlet, he backtracked from that claim. So the London claims and other things, I don't see any substantial evidence to this. These are all
Fine.
The hearsay. And
if you don't see substantial evidence to that, let's move on to this main question here that I have. And this is what has been said about the former Pakistani ambassador to the U.S., Mr. Hossein Haqqani. It is said by Imran Khan that he was hired by the government without him knowing it in order to misrepresent Khan and saying that Khan is anti-American, because Khan originally came out and said it's the U.S. that meddled in Pakistan and ordered for his removal. But then later on in an interview, that's what Imran Khan has said. Do you believe that's what happened?
Hossein Haqqani was always involved in some kind of activities regarding Pakistan, and I am totally surprised to know about that somebody hired the services of Hossein Haqqani, which was yesterday being treated as traitor, and today somebody from Pakistan's powerful circles hiring him against Imran Khan or against, for anything. That is ridiculous and that is unbelievable. But this is Pakistan, and things like that.
I can give you the source. I can give you the source after the program. I can give you the source right now too. But I want to ask the same question from you, Shayan Ali, where you have the army chief who was feeding the lobbyists in the U.S. about Imran Khan and his anti-American sentiment, which was represented by the Pakistani ambassador to the U.S., Hossein Haqqani. I don't know if you've heard that. The source is The Intercept. They uncovered it in their investigative, work on this case. Do you believe that that is what has happened, and therefore a fallout between Khan and the ISI to have ruptured?
I'll just reiterate. Imran Khan, none of the Pakistani people are anti-American. Whatever's been done, it's a misconception. It's a mass misconception. And whoever's behind this, whether it's Nawaz Sharif or whether it's... the inter-service intelligence, whoever's behind this clearly doesn't want Imran Khan to come into power because they're playing a bigger game.
We don't know the answer. Can you please tell us why they don't want him to come to power? Why would, with such popularity, for him to come to power?
As soon as Imran Khan comes into power, the first thing he's going to do is lock up the criminals. Shabazz Sharif was born into office. The current government is headed by crooks, by criminals. The leader of the PMLN party, which is the party in power, Nawaz Sharif, is a certified criminal by the Supreme Court of Pakistan. It is no surprise why the Sharif family doesn't want Imran Khan back in power, because as soon as he comes back in power, the first thing he's going to do is lock these criminals up.
All right, then let's get our guest from Islamabad to answer that. Abdul Khan, what do you think about our statements made by our guest there in London?
As I early said, that the conviction of Nawaz Sharif was also on a very flimsy ground, just like Imran Khan. So somebody can tomorrow say that Imran Khan is a criminal because a court has declared him criminal. I think the both cases were political. Nawaz Sharif was also convicted on political grounds, and Imran Khan is also convicted on political grounds. This is a fact. And by declaring somebody that he is criminal and thief and all these kind of things, these are just drum beating without having solid evidence. I think we should avoid by declaring somebody just because one party or one leader said that he is thief and he is stealing. The other says that you are stealing. I think we should come out of this. This is something that if Pakistan has to go for the stability in Pakistan has to think that what should we do? Because all these political wranglings always bring instability in Pakistan after every 4 and 5 years, as I said earlier, that there is a chaos in the country and stability in the country. So we have to move out of this. If we have to bring stability, we will have to think whether this democracy suits us or not.
All right. As a social activist, Shayan Ali, what are you going to do now? You have, from what I understand and from what it looks like, you're a supporter of Imran Khan. Now he's been handed a jail term. What is the path forward, the way you see it?
Well, the path forward is, as far as I can see, Imran Khan's the only man standing for what is right in Pakistan. He's the voice of millions of Pakistanis who've been robbed by the Sharifs, who've been robbed by the Zardaris. So I'm going to support Imran Khan in every way I can. Even right now, I just came back from a protest outside the Pakistani High Commission. Thankfully, it was a very good turnout. And even next week, Sunday, 13 August at 3 p.m., I'm holding a massive rally in Trafalgar Square to, you know, raise this issue that Pakistanis are facing unfair trials. Imran Khan has been unfairly arrested. And many other people, such as journalists, such as Imran Riaz Khan, Pakistani ladies, such as Sanam Javed Khan, Ali Hamza Malik, all these people are facing unfair arrests, unfair trials, such as in military courts. It's breaking international law. It's ridiculous.
Sure.
These... whoever's behind this, we all know who's behind this, but whoever's behind this is making a mockery of Pakistan and the judiciary.
I'm going to jump in to give the last question to Abdullah Khan. Abdullah Khan, we have seen the rise in the relationship and the enhancement between the United States and India. And I'm wondering, based on the long relationship that the CIA and Pakistan's ISI has had, that the U.S. does not see ISI being that relevant in its plans for the region. Is that why there's somewhat of not as a close relationship between the U.S. and Pakistan, something that perhaps ISI sees might be relevant to it, to that relationship? What do you think?
First of all, I would like to say that we should not see the relationship between Pakistan and the United States from the perspective of India. India is definitely a big country, and the U.S. has good relations with it. But if you believe or anybody thinks that ISI or Pakistan or Pakistani security forces will remain irrelevant to the United States, I think that is not correct. But ISI will and is and still will remain relevant to the international powers, because it is by the Pakistan strategic location.
Sure.
A lot of other things Pakistan has to do. You know, Afghanistan
Thank
is
you.
Still there to handle, and a lot of other things are there that Pakistan, no one can actually write off Pakistan.
Very well. Thank you.
Somebody thinks so.
Thank you for that. Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time. Abdullah Khan, Managing Director, Pakistan Institute for Conflict and Security Studies. Shayan Ali, thank you. Social activist there from London.
Thank you.
With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Ikobe Tagwe and the team, it's goodbye.
This